Everyone, I'm going to convene the April 9, 2015 meeting of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. Again, we have a fairly busy schedule this morning. I just want to update the committee members on a couple of items. First of all, we've had the on-again, off-again Arundo Domex bill, and I'm going to ask that because there are differing opinions of how to approach that, if folks could please get together and by the close of business today, so by 5 p.m., I'd like committee members to let Mr. Gallagher and myself know what your final preferences are on that bill. Now, I know that there have been a couple of different suggested amendments to that bill, and we need to get final closure because I can't keep posting and dropping and reposting. So I would appreciate your help on that. Number two, the pesticide work group reached agreement on a package that includes buffers, a complaints process that's driven by a set of standard operating procedures. I should mention on the buffers that we're going to be asking the Department of Forestry to do an analytical review. We're asking the Department of Agriculture to post on its website a list of restricted use pesticides. Funding will be based on an increase in the registration fees. Licensing will occur per the various licensing bills that that were presented to this committee. And lastly, penalties will be doubled in the first and subsequent violations. For the first violation, it'll double to $2,000. For subsequent violations, it'll double to $4,000. And we are going to be doing those in three different bills. And if anybody has questions, I would be happy to sit down and meet with you about that. So, with that, I understand that there's some traffic problems once again north of us, and we're going to modify the agenda as it appears. And while we're waiting for some folks, hopefully to be able to get through the traffic, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3435. Mr. Gallagher, could you tell us a little bit about this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3435 authorizes the State Department of Agriculture to require a person holding or applying for a license to engage in seed transactions for commercial purposes to report grass seed supply information to the Department of Agriculture.
Thank you very much. And this will be a bill that we ran out of time the last time. Has anyone seen Mark Simmons? Is he around? Somebody would poke their head out. I'd appreciate it. Thank you for that. I'm going to call up Greg Loberg, Katie Fast, and Roger Beyer. Not here either. I'm moving right along. I don't see anyone on the list here. Very good. Everybody's stuck in that traffic jam. With that, I'm going to temporarily close the hearing on House Bill 3435 until we get some folks who are here to testify on the bill.
Right here, because we do have Paul Bell here to talk about annual timber harvest sale on forest lands. Rep Helm is also stuck in traffic. So,
all right, who's here to testify on a bill?
Eight of them. Got a couple of wayward guys back there.
Okay. We're going to try to open, to find some bodies to testify.
Close on that.
Close on House Bill 3435, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3210 and hope that there's someone here to testify on it.
Mr. Chair, would you like us to take our turn out there to testify?
Sure. At this point, I'm going to have to be doing a tap dance.
Oh, a new agenda came out.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3210 requires that annual timber harvest on state forest lands in each subject forest district equal at a minimum specified percentage of annual amount of harvestable timber expected to be grown on state forest lands in the district. And
Mr. Chair, we have Paul Bell from the department to explain.
All right. Paul, Mr. Bell, if you'd like to come up, please, and if you have others with you this morning.
One was removed. It says down here.
Good morning to you both. Welcome to our committee. Thanks for the quick stand-in here while we're waiting for others to arrive.
That's good, Bill. That was Wilson. Good morning, Chair Witt and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Paul Bell, Deputy Director, at least to the end of the month, for the Department of Forestry. As I'm retiring. So,
congratulations.
Announce, if you haven't seen, Nancy Hirsch is my replacement and the incoming Deputy Director for the department. So she's coming out of the fire chief position to step up to that.
So. And so your date is...
April 30th.
My goodness, a short timer. Well,
so with me today is Brian Pugh, Deputy Chief of our State Forest Division. We are here today to provide testimony in opposition to House Bill 3210. State forest lands managed by the Board of Forestry are managed for the greatest permanent value, or GPV, meaning they're managed to provide healthy, productive, and sustainable forest ecosystems that over time and across the landscape provide a full range of social, economic, and environmental benefits to the people of Oregon. The Board of Forestry has adopted forest management plans for these lands that are designed to meet this statutory mandate. House Bill 3210 would override the authority of the Board to adopt management plans that achieve greatest permanent value. In effect, changing the definition of GPV adopted by the Board in administrative rules. Further, House Bill 3210 would require the development of new state forest management plans that achieve 80% of the harvest levels possible under the Forest Practices Act and would replace the current Board of Forestry approved management plan, which was developed based on significant public and stakeholder input and multiple integrated forest values. Additionally, the requirement that volume deficiencies in one county be made up in another county may lead to unsustainable harvests to the long-term detriment of the other county.
Okay, thanks.
The department is currently revising the Northwest Oregon Forest Management Plan using a collaborative, stakeholder-driven process, which House Bill 3210 would undermine. The goals of this public process underway now are to achieve a financially viable outcome for the State Forest Division and increase conservation outcomes. The process has involved representatives from the counties, the conservation community, the timber industry, recreation, and the public at large. For these reasons, and with the support of the Board of Forestry for this position, the Department of Forestry opposes this legislation. We appreciate the opportunity to be able to testify in front of you today, and we'd be pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Committee members, anything for our panelists?
Yeah, I do.
Yes, Representative Escobar, please.
We've seen this movie before. We've had this, I think, 4 years ago. The Board of Forestry did not react to it at that time, and obviously they haven't reacted to it up until now. So why would we not proceed with this since your department and your board has done nothing about it? Because it was an upping of the cut, I believe, from 50% or 55% to 85%, wasn't it, 4 years ago?
Chair Witt, Representative Escoval, there have been several different versions of bills that have ran through this process in relationships to different ways to manage different levels of harvest volumes. The Board of Forestry has been working diligently to try and bring the stakeholders together to have the conversation and work through a planning process to try again to meet that greatest permanent value. You know, it's obviously a very difficult process to, you know, have all those different values be brought together and to come to a common understanding and support of that process. But that is the board's job, as currently structured, and have worked through several different processes over the years in relation to the different concerns that have been brought through. But through this very public process, they do feel that they're making ground here, and the current process that's in place is being worked very diligently.
Hello, Mr. Chair.
Please.
With all due respect, where are you at today, then, compared to 4 years ago? Because this sounds like the broken record from 4 years ago. And if you haven't made any progress, why wouldn't we take action to make you make progress?
Chair Witt, Representative Escoval, I'm going to have our Deputy Division Chief here address that.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Witt. For the record, my name is Brian Pugh. I'm the Deputy Division Chief of the State Forest Division. Representative Escoval, good question. I understand it. For the past 2 years, the division has been working very closely with the Board of Forestry on a new planning process. When I say with the Board of Forestry, I also mean the public, stakeholder groups, and counties, and closely tied with the governor's office also. So we've convened about 2 years ago. We have been making progress. We are on a path to success, we think. Just yesterday, we met with our subcommittee of the Board of Forestry. So there's four members that of the board that have formed a subcommittee 2 years ago. And we meet with them monthly. Those meetings are a workshop style, about 5 or 6 hours. So they've got a lot of time invested into it. And energy. So yesterday at our meeting, we have initial path for modeling, for analysis, the information they need for decision making. The twin goals are to achieve financial viability. And to be clear, to achieve financial viability, we are definitely talking about increasing the harvest level. We don't have a target, but increased harvest level is part of it. The second of the twin goals is to improve conservation outcomes on the lands we manage. And so there's always, with that balance of GPV, there is ways that we can improve conservation too. So on our current timeline, to get directly to your question, we are hoping to have a new plan this November. And so we would implement that plan in fiscal 17.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
What is your current level of harvest percentage-wise compared to the growth? I know exactly. This is about the growth.
Sure. Thank you. So we manage the lands on the harvest side for sustained yield and long-term even flow of harvest. So we have a predictable even flow over the life of the trees. Our current annual harvest is 220 million board feet per year.
Percentage-wise.
And that works out to, if I understand, I want to make sure I'm answering the right question. So on the acres available for harvest, we harvest 100% of the available growth. It's the acres that are unavailable harvest to stream buffers and things like that. To speak directly more to 3210, we do not manage the forest. We manage the forest to GPV, which at sometimes meets the Forest Practices Act and sometimes exceeds it. If we were to manage it just to the Forest Practices Act, we would be harvesting approximately 70% of the annual growth.
Follow up,
please.
We're not answering my question. You have a total forest that you're taking care of. You have a growth factor every year. I've asked, what is your percentage of harvest today of that total growth factor? Because it used to be about 55%, but you've talked about lands that we're supposed to harvest and lands that we aren't supposed to harvest. I don't want that. I want it put together. Tell me what the total is, because that's what we need to deal with.
Thank you for clarifying the question. It is still 55% approximately.
So in other words, in 4 years, we haven't gained a thing.
That's right. In the past 4 years, our harvest level has not increased, but we are currently in a planning process, and one of those outcomes, we expect that we will increase harvest.
And to be able to assist some of the committee members, could you give some notion of some of the alternatives of what increase might occur as a result of the alternatives? I think that might help some of our members here.
Chair Witt, if I understand the question correctly, you're asking, you know, what are the future possibilities for the forest around harvest levels?
Yes.
And Chair Witt, maybe if I can help set this up, the basis of moving to the allocation process that the board's currently going down.
Okay. Right, so specifically at this time, it's too preliminary to have an actual harvest target number.
Okay, then we can leave it at that, unless you think that it's appropriate to proceed.
Chair Witt, I just make the point that in the board's current planning process that they're working on is to look at a land allocation process to be able to differentiate and in my mind, maybe more directly get to Representative Escobar's question is to be more clear as to what the volume is coming off of on an annual harvest base. But those numbers are yet to be determined.
Okay, very good. I'm going to recognize Vice Chair Krieger, then Representative Whitsitt.
We've both been on the Board of Forestry, I think something like 14 years worth of it. We were doing the Northwest Forest Plan when I left, and I understand what the greatest permanent value is. I understand that there's a different emphasis, and there's been an increased emphasis on water quality for endangered fish, riparian zone protection, those types of things. But I do recall that Dr. Sessions came in with a modeling thing of what was available. And amazing, because I'm trying to think, what was Dick's last name sitting next to us? Remember?
Yeah.
Anyway,
you're killing me.
I says, no way can they get to that. Well, when Dr. Sessions came in here and testified the year after when I was here, he said the model was off. Well, how much was it off? About 50%. If you're going to use modeling and not on the ground work, you better get your model closer than that. I told him at the time, I can get two lagers, a case of beer, drink the beer, and guess closer than that. And I said that to him here. So when you hear people want to say an increased harvest, it's based on what is that forest growing? Can we get more value out of it? But at the same time, Representative Escobar, I don't know anyone here that doesn't want to protect the values that are on our state forest land, but we think we can do better. And I know you're dealing with spotted owls and murrelets and ESA issues, but I would have expected in 4 years you would have been a little further along on the path.
We got that. Yeah, thank you. And for the record, the beer is just for clarity.
That's what I was. It's like, wow, why aren't we marketing beer for those sorts of clarifications?
And before I recognize Representative Whitsitt, I would join the chorus that would like to see more harvest coming off of our state lands. With that said, as one of the people who was responsible for the forest plan that we've been operating under. I feel obligated to help make clear on the record that model was imperfect, and it was imperfect because in large part we did not have adequate ground truthing, and we did not have the resources at the time to do the adequate ground truthing. And this is, I can think of no better example of why it is absolutely critical when we ask folks to go out and develop a model that we give them the necessary tools to develop a model that we can trust in. Because Vice Chair Krieger is absolutely right. We could have been sitting around on a stump drinking beer and trying to figure it out. I witnessed this firsthand, and I will tell you that the folks at the Department of Forestry did the absolute best job anybody could have possibly done, and they did it with the assistance of renowned foresters, not only in Oregon, but throughout North America, brought in professors from Canada and every other place to double-check what we had done. And if the data had been accurate, we probably would have been on the mark. But you get garbage in and garbage out, and that's what we bought. And another example of you can't buy a Cadillac on the cheap. It doesn't happen. You get what you pay for. And so with that, Representative Whitsitt, please.
Thank you. I think this legislature would like to see your cumulative quantitative data on your stated conservation outcomes, since that's one of the things that seems to be taking precedence over other things. I think that among many members that I know this session, all across the board, we would like to see some accountability for the amount of money that is being spent on conservation measures or, credits I'm using another committee. But one of the things we keep hearing are conservation outcomes. What does that mean exactly? And shouldn't we have a stated outcome and then see where we're at as we go through the years on that in a scientific way and have a report back to the legislature about what this means? I mean, we're out here using terms that are sort of amorphous, generalized things, and we never know as legislators what are you talking about and how is it going. So, I mean, that's more of a question. Could you come up with what are your stated conservation outcomes and where are you now 4 years into this plan? We are asking for the same thing among harvestable, millions of board feet. We're not seeing it. Are we seeing it in the conservation outcomes, which is the other big part of this? Thank you.
Chair, Representative Whitsitt, if this may be more kind of a general response forward, but and back to the modeling, and then maybe Brian can add on a little bit to address your question. The modeling It is a tough process, and it costs a lot of money. But that has been put into the system, and the modeling is moving forward, I think, in a very strong, very positive fashion. We need to keep coming back to greatest permanent value and what that represents across the social, economic, and environmental constraints. And as you work within those, it's how one informs the other to maintain that balance across. And the questions and the points you bring up, Representative Whitsitt, I think are what are those measurable outcomes? And if you can.
Right. So I think that's a great question and a great suggestion in there, too. I do not have those numbers in my head today, and honestly, we produce an annual report, and some of those metrics are easy. Amount of revenue we generated, amount of board feet. We do try to report on conservation metrics, but there is a wide range of conservation that occurs. So there would be acres that are encumbered by T&E, so owls and murrelets, stream restoration projects that we do, and other things. And so it's we'll say a mix of apples and oranges. We do recognize your suggestion there, though, as we go forward in this planning process and develop a new plan and implement it, we do need to be better at reporting out on an annual basis our contributions to conservation. They benefit clean air, clean water, essentially all of Oregonians. And so we will be focused on that in the future of better reporting so everybody understands what the forest is contributing.
I just want to follow.
Yes, please.
I want to see, and a lot of us want to see measurable, you know, what did you start with, what did you finish with actual scientific data, not we have cleaner air and water. I mean, you can measure cleaner air and you can measure cleaner water, but first you have to know where you're starting from. And that's what I'm after. Can you show us, can you set up some kind of a program where you have a goal and not just say terms like cleaner air, cleaner water, whatever. You can actually measure those things now. So that's what you need to do, I think, if you want to continue on with support from the legislature and the money going into these state forests. Thanks.
I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McLean.
Well, I feel like I've come into the middle of a conversation, and so I'm trying to figure out all of the pieces, but the part that forests have to be managed, and management means that there's going to be harvest because you have to manage your forest. You can't just continue to, you know, to let all of them grow together. I mean, we all know that there's a reason to harvest. And so the only thing that was kind of troubling me about this particular bill wasn't anything to do with trying to get more harvest, but it was putting a percentage in there that I didn't understand. So now I understand there's a 55% that's being harvested from Section 2 that is harvestable timber growth in a calendar year, correct? And so it seems to me like there needs to be more discussion, for me anyway, on why is it at 55%? Why does someone here want it to be 85%? Why do we feel like, I mean, it needs to be harvested if we're not harvesting enough, but what's there has to be a report, or there has to be some kind of a scale, or there has to be this dialogue that you're talking about that discusses some of those things. So it seems to me like you have those work sessions going with your subgroup. We need to hear more information about what is the dialogue, what are their thoughts on, you know, why we need to move for more of a harvestable amount. Now, that's simple, right? I mean, in my mind. But it's one of those things where it sounds like we're trying to complicate something, but I don't think that we're asking for information that we don't need. We need it if we're going to understand the plan.
Thank you very much. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, right along those same lines, I was going to ask basically the same question, but a little differently. Based on Representative Escobal's and Representative Krieger's comments that this has been in process for 4 years, the 55% that you mentioned here and the 85%, which is the bill's target, would you oppose the bill if it was, say, at 60%? Or would you oppose the bill if it was at 65%? And is there an increased target out there, since there hasn't been anything in the last 4 years, that you could aim for in the next 4 years?
Chair Witt, Representative Barreto, probably the significant point here is the, you know, this is under the Board of Forestry's jurisdiction, and the, you know, we, at this point, unless they receive different direction from the Board of Forestry, would be to oppose in relationship that, you know, that information needs to come into the Board of Forestry, and the Board of Forestry works through the planning process to meet. Now, there's, you know, obviously several stakeholders in the process, and that's part of the difficulty in this process is trying to meld that to get to a socially acceptable harvest level.
I'm going to recognize Vice Chair Krieger, followed by Representative Esquivel.
Talking about 55%, but we're not talking about what that 55% is. So what is the annual growth in million board feet, and then what is the 55% of that that you are now taking? So then we know how much we're gaining a year.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, I hesitate to do math in my head in public. So I know our annual harvest is 220 million board feet, so rough numbers, about
400, give or take.
400, a little over 400 a year. Recognize that I want to be clear, some of that volume is occurring in stream buffers. Some of it's occurring in marble murrelet areas. Some of it's occurring in spotted owls areas. And under Federal Endangered Species Act and take avoidance, that volume is not available for harvest. And so while it was growing on the landscape, we cannot take that and meet the requirements of the Federal Endangered Species Act.
Please.
Maybe you need to be not talking about 55% of the total. You need to be talking about 55% of what's available. What is that? In other words, you got these areas that you can't take avoidance. I don't think half the people in this committee know what take avoidance is. So when you start talking about all these things, the terminology changes what we're looking at.
Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things. One is that, and Representative Krieger's correct, we shouldn't even be talking about stuff that we have setbacks. We shouldn't be talking about stuff that's off limits. We should be talking about what we have available for harvesting timber and the growth rate of that. That's what we should be talking about. Nothing more, nothing less. But the other thing is, if my memory serves me correct, from 4 years ago, this particular bill, which was similar to what we had 4 years ago, created about 2,000 jobs.
All right. With that, committee members, I would just add that I think this is a classic example of we need to walk in each other's shoes to be able to appreciate the challenges. To be able to appreciate the challenges that the department and the board face in trying to come up with a plan and meet all of the various needs that the public presents to them and demands from them on a daily basis. And then the flip side of that for the department and particularly the board to understand where we are as legislators. And I think that kind of discussion would be helpful. And I'd like to pick up on Representative McLean's suggestion that it might be helpful to have that kind of dialogue. And Mr. Gallagher, if we have time again for an informational hearing, maybe we could have that kind of discussion and share kind of in a two-way dialogue. And I'd be most appreciative of that. So. With that, gentlemen, I want to thank you very, very much. And Paul, I hope we get to see you again here before you make it to the promised land. But in any event, we have certainly appreciated your multiple appearances before us. And I want to wish you the absolute very best. Representative Esquivel.
Now, Paul, are you heading south for the winter now?
Actually, I'm going to head north to Alaska for the summer.
And, oh, that's okay.
Spend my time fishing instead of fighting.
Well,
fire.
Good for you.
Representative Whitsitt.
Paul, thank you. And on a personal level, for all the forest fires that we've been on and you've toured with me and the senator and for your work, and I'm really glad you don't have to be here this summer.
Thank you very much. I've appreciated all of your support.
Well, and we have appreciated your very long and dedicated public service, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks.
With that, I'd like to call up, please. Christina's here. Christina McNitt and Bill Cluding. And Tim Josie. Tim. Good morning to each of you. Welcome to our committee. If you could keep your comments brief and to the point, I'd be very appreciative of it. We have an ambitious agenda before us, and I know the commissioner knows what it's like to serve as a chairman here in this building, and so we would appreciate your helping accommodate us in terms of our schedule. Thank you.
Sure. Committee for the Record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. Let me state right off the first thing that the Department of Forestry has done all they can do to keep this system working right. I testified in front of the subcommittee of Forestry, Board of Forestry, yesterday, and I was pretty abrupt with them. I don't like the direction that they're trying to go with this new plan, and I let them know. But we got some good folks that work in the Department of Forestry, and we're losing one, as we just now stated. Let's talk about where we're at today. Let's talk about the Elliott. The land board stepped forward. The schools needed money. We had workers that needed jobs. I had 2,000 members in that area that needed the timber. Again, Department of Forestry stepped forward and they put the sales up. I mean, they plan ahead on these sales. They plan ahead, years ahead. What happened? Appeals. Right now, we could have had over 100 million board feet of timber cut in the mills, people working. It got tied up in the courts. Federal court. Of course, the environmental groups got to pick the judge they wanted. And after studying it for a year, she issued a 32-page report on why she didn't think that those sales could go forward. There again, she's never been in the forest. That forest is virtually shut down. Let's talk about Tillamook Clatsop. As you recall, I think I've stated in here that NOAA sent the governor, previous governor, excuse me, a letter saying you're not going to get the $4 million this year. We're not satisfied with your coho salmon restoration. Well, I can argue that point. Anybody that's fished in this on their coastal streams, our coho population's back, amazingly back. Steelhead is back. But yet, with that letter, it triggered, again, the Department of Forestry had sales online in the Tillamook and Clatsop. That could have put another 50 people to work. We got mills on the coast that are screaming for timber. I'll let Tony Josie talk about the effects for them, but immediately those sales were threatened with an appeal. The Department of Forestry pulled them. Again, let's not blame the Department of Forestry. I walk on thin ice when I say this, but we got to look back at the Attorney General's lack of enthusiasm for taking these appeals on. Again, referring to the Elliott, she refused to take the environmental groups on those appeals without even going in the courtroom. Her attorneys asked the environmental groups, what do we have to do for you to drop these appeals. And they said, simple, cancel all your sales. Within 2 weeks, they sent a bill into the state of Oregon for almost $400,000 for attorney fees. And we paid it. I urge this committee to invite these so-called environmental conservation groups in and question them why they want to hangstring the state of Oregon and the people that live in it. With the rules of the endangered species and the threatened species, I can guarantee you I could stop 75%. I could form a nonprofit group, and I could stop 75% of every sale that the Department of Forestry works hard to put online. I could find something. Chair Witt, I'll take your advice. I'll keep mine short. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Christina McNitt, representing the Oregon Forest Industries Council. I apologize. I've gotten to that point in my life where I have to do the ugly glasses on my nose thing because I've got some data here and I have to read. So if you'll indulge me, I'd appreciate that. House Bill 3210 today, relating to the amount of timber harvested on state forest lands, contemplates setting a minimum harvest level of 85% of annual growth. From OFIC's perspective, we're excited that you're even having the conversation around this question. 15 counties in Oregon receive revenues from Oregon State Forests, so any plan revision must be supported by the counties and viewed as equitable among them. And I believe that you'll hear from my colleague, Commissioner Tim Josie, but irrespective of that, OFIC is supportive of the spirit of House Bill 3210. We welcome this discussion, and we'd be interested in working with parties to pound out any details. And here's why. To some of your questions, Representative Esquivel. Oregon State Forests are managed by the Board of Forestry so as to secure the greatest permanent value of these lands to the state. And with all due respect to the Department of Forestry, this bill does not change the greatest permanent value or that statutory directive. One of the duties within the greatest permanent value is to provide revenues to the 15 Forest Trust counties. Not only does the current plan that the board uses to manage this asset fail this duty, the state forest program inside the Oregon Department of Forestry itself, the management program, is going broke. In fact, for those of you tracking Ways and Means, you'll hear next week at ODF's budget hearings their request for almost $3 million in general funds to pay for programs that it can no longer afford. From our perspective as private industry, this is astounding. The Northwest State Forest comprise almost 610,000 acres. Excluding federal forest lands in the state of Oregon, the asset base included in the Northwest State Forest represents the third or the fourth largest landowner in Oregon. And yet its program operations are running about $6 million short every year. If ODF can't fund its own programs, that really begs the question about whether or not Oregon is meeting its duty to provide revenues to counties, which is a social aspect of the greatest permanent value. It includes social, environmental, and economic considerations. And again, I'll let Commissioner Josie address that question. But I have some interesting facts, and I'd like to refer you to the charts that I passed out. First of all, on the first page, the orange line represents the annual growth of the Northwest State Forest, which is at 414 million board feet a year. That's annual growth. Yet the harvest is approximately 220 million board feet. You'll see that in the far right column of the chart. The far left column of the chart represents the timber harvest optimization model under the Forest Practices Act. This is the type of model that would be utilized by our private sector land managers, observing all of the rules and statutory framework by both the federal and the state governments, including the Forest Practices Act, endangered species requirements, protecting water, and all of the benefits that the department also needs to meet. We propose that there may be a happy medium just for consideration. It's kind of a fun conversation, and that's the center column. It represents what we're calling a 70-30 managed, 70% managed, 30% conservation zoned approach. That would increase harvest to 320 million board feet. So the current harvest plan is 53% of growth. The 70-30 managed plan, based on different assumptions that we have from what the department is currently modeling, would harvest about 77% of the annual growth. If you could turn to the next page. The next page represents the graphs, the same graphs, but rather than from a growth model standpoint, it shows revenues. So under a timber harvest optimization plan with the Forest Practices Act, these assets would be managed, owned by a private landowner, to likely generate about a $54 million a year increase over what they're currently doing. The 70-30 managed conservation zoned approach would bring in an additional $35 million a year. This is incremental money over what they're currently generating. The Northwest State Forest Management Plan that they're operating under now, which was approved in 2001 and never met the targets that were understood by either industry or the counties, is currently losing money. And so for my favorite page is the last page, because although I represent the industry, I have to admit that million board feet, billion board feet, all of that is a little bit confusing and hard to get your hands around, but money I get. And so we went to the Department of Forestry's website. We selected the 15 counties that receive revenues from these state forests. We totaled 2012, 2013, and 2014 for the purpose of getting a three-year average and then understanding what percent of the total average each county got. And so with an increased harvest of 100 million board feet per year, which generates $35 million per year, considering $350 per 1,000 board feet, when you run that through the percentage calculations, you can see what the additional increment on an annual basis would be for those counties. I'll highlight Tillamook County only because we're lucky enough to have a Tillamook County commissioner here. But Tillamook County, in this example, would receive approximately $6,429,000 more each year. I want to emphasize again that this is based on operating under all of the current laws and protections for resource values that private landowners do today. You might wonder why OFIC is so interested in what counties receive as revenues. Again, that's the social aspect of the greatest permanent value, but the economic aspect of greatest permanent value from our perspective is jobs and is volume into mills. 100 million board feet to represent for you, I have one member who could utilize only half of that in two different mill sites, one in Warrenton, one in Tillamook, that together would increase 100 direct jobs tomorrow. That's a big deal for those communities and those mills and maintaining infrastructure capacity. Finally, I'm just going to close by saying the statutory revenue distribution affords the Department of Forestry 36.25% of all of the revenues that are generated from these state forests. So they, too, would benefit with an increased harvest of 100 million board feet to the tune of $12,687,000 a year, which more than covers the annual deficit that they're experiencing today would preserve the competition for general fund dollars and would be able to support increased recreation and other public interest values that that forest needs to be managed for. I submit to you that this is an exciting conversation. I think $35 million is material and matters. The largest percentage of those dollars that go to the counties then are transferred to school districts, and I appreciate you having this conversation and hope that we have an opportunity to continue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Josie, great to see you this morning, sir. Welcome.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here. I've been a county commissioner. I'm going on my 17th year now. If you do your math, that will tell you that I'm most likely one of those that got term limited out, and that's the case. I served 8 years sitting on a committee that basically is the same committee with a different name, and so it's nice to be back. I have a plaque on my wall in my office. I keep it there because it's a great reminder. It's a from the Department of Forestry and the Board of Forestry thanking me for my efforts in the development of the 2001 State Forest Management Plan, which turned out to be a big failure. And I'll get back to that, but I want to talk about Christina's comments about just Tillamook County and the $6 million, and just to personalize this and what this means to Tillamook County and what it means to you. That $6 million would be about in additional revenues, it'd be $1.8 million to our general fund, Tillamook County General Fund. $3.6 million of that would go to schools. That's money that you folks don't have to send to schools. And so you start doing the math and get all of the counties involved. We're talking about real bucks. And so this is a really important issue for not just Tillamook County's General Fund and Tillamook County's the jobs that we provide and sheriff's deputies and that sort of thing, but it's also important to our schools. So let me get back. As soon as I became a commissioner, I started working on the State Forest Management Plan, and I worked with both Chair Witt and Representative Krieger. And we spent a lot of time working on that. We were told in the end by some modeling by Dr. John Sessions that for the three Northwest districts, excuse me, we would get about 279 million board feet per year. And just as soon as the board adopted it, I actually clapped. I don't know if you remember that. Wow, that was wonderful. Well, then they took it out to the unit foresters and to the districts to actually ground truth this thing for the first time. And it wasn't 279, it was 149. And so that's when all hell broke loose. If you talked to the state forester at the time, Jim Brown, you ought to get him in here and ask him about this thing. He uses four-letter words now about he thinks he was duped. And I think that he was also, I think we all were. There were a number of people that worked for the department at the time, this is me talking, that they were bought on the structure-based management principles being a win for the environment and win for timber revenues, and they just glossed over the fine details. And when it actually got passed, it all became clear. And so it bordered, from my perspective, on malfeasance by some of the folks that are no longer with the department that have retired. And then we got a new Board of Forestry. You folks left. We got a new state forester. And when you folks were there, the trust counties were given a lot of respect. And they said, you know, Wayne, you said, you let me know what you want out of this thing. And I said, this is going to work, and you voted for it. And a lot of the board said that. Well, since then, it's just been a real lesson in frustration working with brand new boards, brand new staff, brand new state foresters, and trying to get this forest management plan changed, and we could never get it changed. We got some minor changes. Susan Morgan, when she was in the legislature, she got a budget note that increased the harvest for a couple of years, but that was really the only substantive change that happened. Why are they changing the plan now? Because they're going broke. That's the only reason, not because of all the work that I put out and all the trust counties that put out. Incidentally, I chair of the trust counties, the 15 counties that deeded their lands to the state to be managed on our behalf. And I've been doing that for, I don't know, maybe 15 years. And so it's been real, real frustrating for me. If you look at the greatest permanent value rule, and I encourage you to do that, I mean, it basically says be everything to everybody at all times. But if when the people that developed the greatest permanent value rule, and I was in the legislature at the time, and so I wasn't part of that, but the people that did are still with us. And they before it was finally adopted, they went out of the hall and they said, look, there isn't anything about paying attention to the primary purpose of these lands, which is timber production. So they added another paragraph, you know, right below the main statement, and it's called the primary focus is timber production. You need to look at that. That's ignored all of the time, but that's there. And I've been before this legislative body a couple of times trying to fix the greatest permanent value rule and never got a hearing. So that's been my effort. Now, we're not going to take a position on this bill. The Trust County's met a couple of days ago, and we discussed this. The reason why we're not going to take a position is because it is our hope that the department and the board is operating in good faith. I think the jury's still out in good faith in terms of developing a new forest management plan. They made a couple of decisions yesterday that raised a lot of red flags. Talking to them privately, they say that we'll work this out once we get the numbers. I don't know, so I'm greatly concerned. But in reality, I think this Board of Forestry is operating for the most part in good faith to fix this that will benefit all of us. And so we decided to not take position on this bill, but they also decided to send me over here and give you a little bit of a lesson. And so I'll stop by saying there's some of you that feel like you've been caught in midstream. If you're interested, give me a call. I'll come over and spend as much time as you would like giving you a history lesson, answering your questions. And this invitation goes out to any one of you. I've been at this for so many years that is sort of daunting. I'll finish with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, very, very much. Committee members, anything for this panel? Representative Esquivel.
One thing. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, didn't we get the same answer 2 to 4 years ago when we went through this, that they're going to work on it, they're going to improve it, and they're going to do a different plan?
I think 2 to 4 years ago, Representative Esquivel, you have to forgive my protocol. I've been up there, and it's hard for me to get it right. There was a recognition then that it needed to be changed. We had a different board at that time, at least a different board chair, and it was at that point in time that the prior board chair made the statement, look, the house is on fire, we need to get this thing going. And so that was the beginning stages. It was just at that time that they were looking at the Forest Development Fund and doing some long-range analysis and realizing that they were in trouble. And so, you know, the wheels of government run pretty slow. But this is running pretty fast when you look at the overall scheme of things. They've been at this for a couple of years now.
One follow-up, please. Just for the record, I believe that when we had this hearing, Governor Kitzhaber came in and killed the bill.
Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I think, first of all, I'd like to commend Ms. McNitt. This is, I think, a proposal, an idea, a work product that has great value, and I appreciate the work that went into coming to this particular point. I think it's a conversation that we need to keep having. I don't think there's anybody in this building that doesn't disagree that our schools need revenue. We have deficits in a lot of budget areas. Our rural counties are struggling mightily. Jobs in our rural counties are critical to the economic vitality of those of us who live in these areas where we've been struggling for decades. I think that's a recognized fact. I guess I have a question for, it might be the agency folks, now that I've been thinking about this, that, you know, if I wasn't here 4 years ago, I was here 2 years ago. I live in a community where this is an issue. And I'm curious as to the time frames. We keep talking about, you know, a four-year period. Now we're looking at a couple more years before something is created that we can actually implement. Delay, delay, delay seems to be the order of the day. And is there any hope that we can pull something together? Is there any hope that addressing issues of harvest levels is even a topic of conversation that we can have in this building? And I'm just curious as to what the path might possibly be forward. And this may be a question for the agency or for Ms. McNitt, I'm not sure. But with this particular bill, how does it fit into the proposal that you have for the 70-30 plan?
Thank you, Chair Witt, Representative McCune. There are a couple of questions there. Keep me on track if I don't hit them all. How that proposal fits into the bill is, you know, up to your interests. And again, we are in favor of the spirit of this bill and this conversation. And it comes out of a frustration because of the long, drawn-out, time-intensive planning process by the Board of Forestry. I respect that it's a public process and that it needs to be transparent, no doubt about it. But if your lost opportunity cost is $35 million a year in revenues, that's a very, very expensive planning process. And meanwhile, we have sheriffs who are not being hired, that don't feel that they have the capacity to cover their communities when they swell with tourists. We have school districts that are underfunded, library districts, pool districts. Anyway, so we just feel that what's different now than it was 4 years ago is that the department is asking for general fund dollars. And in our view, that's just a bridge too far. When you have an asset base that represents the third or the fourth largest landowner, forest landowner in the state of Oregon, you need to be committed to utilizing that asset base to support the communities and not to be taking from the general fund. And so we believe that that's a material change, and frankly, it invites you to ask the types of questions that Representative Hildreth Whitsitt asked about how do you quantify conservation. That's entirely legitimate, and we would like to get to an answer there too. I would offer that there's two ways to do that. Another way to look at it is lost revenues for any management over and above the Forest Practices Act. The Forest Practices Act is the law of the land in the state for private landowners. I'm not saying to manage to the Forest Practices Act. Don't hear me say that. I'm saying to measure to the Forest Practices Act, because then that delta, the difference there between what the Board of Forestry manages to industrial landowners, really shows a way to quantify some of that conservation contribution. And I think that's a fair metric as well. So, you know, with that, I hope that this stimulates some conversation. I hope that there's some genuine back and forth in ways and means. I hope that there's a time frame and some responsibility metrics. We're very concerned about where the Board of Forestry is going and the pace of it. And frankly, it's hard not to see the Elliott State Forest situation really unrolling in the Northwest State Forest at the pace that they're going. And perhaps some people have an interest in seeing that occur.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I wasn't going to get into the weeds, but I think it would be beneficial for this committee to hear just, I mentioned that there are a couple of concerns I have with the plan. You know about the Elliott Forest, Elliott State Forest, and it's because of the muralette. And if you look at the protocol that has been foisted on us by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the protocol for protecting the muralette, you can have an area. And in one corner, there's a spotting of a muralette, and that whole area gets protected. And then there's a quarter of a mile around it that gets protected. And it could be private forest lands. It could be state forest lands in lands that are in the 70% emphasis areas. And so the reason why I say that, and we know what happened with the Elliott's, all but closed down. There are two or three sites in my district, in Tillamook, that have been shut down because of that. But right now, the Board of Forestry is looking at the 30% in conservation areas creating old-growth trees. Old-growth trees bring in murrelets. And when that happens, it is just like a cancer in terms of drawing in the rest of the state forest. That's a concern that I have. Now, if they adopt that plan, it's not going to affect me before I retire, but it's going to affect my kids. And so I have a concern about that. The other concern I have about the plan is that they're talking about the 70% not being district by district, but across the landscape where it makes the most sense. Where it makes the most sense is in my county. Steep slopes, poor soils, that sort of thing. And incidentally, it's got some of the best salmon runs in the state of Oregon, and it's because we have good stewardship management on forests right now, and that's not going to change. My county's going to get thrown under the bus if that happens, and so I'm very concerned about that. And so I bring this to your attention just so you pay attention to what the board does. There might be the unintended effects of a new state forest management plan that will have consequences down the years, not just for my county, but for all counties, because of the spreading of the 30%. Last thing I'll say is Tillamook County, tomorrow's a furlough day for me. I'll be working, but it's a furlough day because our $20 million budget, we had a $1.4 million cut in the current budget that we're facing. Next year, it's going to be even worse. We depend on state timber revenues, and if it wasn't for that, we would be in big trouble, and it's because the reduction in state timber revenues that we're in trouble. We have counties to the south of us that are dependent on ONC dollars much more so than we are, that are on the verge or actually, for all intents and purposes, bankrupt. So this is really important for my county and a number of counties that are dependent on state forest lands. That's the reason why I'm so involved.
Very quick follow-up. I just wanted to note that I believe Representative Krieger and I are fully understanding of your comments about how our county budgets are being impacted by this. So you are not alone in your grave concern and understanding the impact of what this is doing to us who live in these counties. Thank you.
Representative Whitsitt.
I'd just like to say, under the OFIC hypothetical plan that follows all of the rules, the $35 million a year generated would pay the better part of the $50 million deductible that we are going to have to meet for our fire season this year if we get the Lloyd's of London policy. Otherwise, this $50 million is going to come right out of general fund for our state. And I don't know where this is going to come from, but, I mean, this is just another example of something that you could do with the $35 million a year would be to help offset the firefighting costs that we are facing because of the drought situation in the state. Just a comment.
With that, I have a request for each of you. Bill, if you could get us by timber sale, the sales that have been appealed, a court challenge placed, and who the plaintiffs are for each sale, say in the last couple of years. Tim, I think you're in a position to ask the AOC to find out how much revenue could be gained in by each county in the school districts. By school districts, so that we know we've got a handle on how much revenue as a state we could gain and not have to be paying into school districts.
I can answer that right now.
Could you do it by county?
No, but if you look at Christina's numbers, the state keeps roughly a third. That's about 63 and a third, or 66 and a third. 63.25. The rest goes back to the counties, and so you reconstitute that as 100%. School districts get roughly 62%. County general funds get 30%, and special districts get 30%. That's for Tillamook County, and the other counties have got to be pretty close to that.
And the reason I'm asking for that is I'd like Christina to add yet another column, and that would be school revenue. Mm-hmm. And I think you've got a story then that some folks are going to pay attention to in this building.
Yeah, I already did the math. For Tillamook County, for schools, it's $3.6 million, the additional revenues that she's talking about.
Wow. Thank you all very, very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
I've got to move on, folks. I've got to move on. Thank you.
Thanks for the time.
With that, I'd like to call up Tom Wolf. Unless he decides to pass.
So I think you take this bit.
Okay. Chair Witt, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm here in three levels. I'm here representing the Oregon Council of Tribal Unlimited as executive director. I'm here representing the North Coast Forest Coalition, a group composed of TU, Wild Salmon Center, Sierra Club, Northwest Guides, and Northwest Steelheaders. And I'm here as the conservation sacrificial lamb. So, I was thinking briefly of maybe I could avoid having to come up there if I ran out in front of traffic on out there in front of the Capitol, but that's too drastic. So, anyway, I'm here to oppose this bill, and because I believe, as the Department of Forestry brought up, there's a process, and I believe that within the Board of Forestry, there should be allowed to carry through the process. Now, the concerns that were brought up by many of the committee members about Department of Forestry not reporting to them, not communicating, not being transparent, but that's valid. Yesterday there was a bill in the Senate Environment Committee about the transparency of ODFW, and even though I opposed the bill overall, they were right about the transparency. We need to improve the transparency of state agencies to the legislators and to the public. Now, as far as this plan goes, and I'll be very brief, we believe there's a good, fair process going on that will speak to the needs of social conservation and providing jobs. And I understand. I grew up I was a student at Seaside Elementary School on the coast. My dad was a school teacher there. I understand the importance of state money from the harvest there going to that, but I just ask that the Board of Forestry be allowed to continue on their current plan, reporting to you and giving as much information as they can to you, but this current plan be allowed to go forward, and therefore I ask that you vote no on House Bill 3210. Thank you.
Tom, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony. Anything very quick for Mr. Wolf? Tom, thanks so very much.
Let
appreciate
him off the hook.
Thank you, Tom.
I owe you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Last call for House Bill 3210. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3210. And with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3435. No.
34.
You got it right. And we have a witness list.
We have Mr. Beyer and Jenny.
Work session.
Okay. Roger Beyer and Jenny Dressler, please.
Do you know we have Representative Parrish?
Good morning to both of you. Quick is really, really good today.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon Seed Council in opposition to House Bill 3435. Mr. Chair, I'd just like to, I guess, express the comments of my board at the most recent meeting at the end of March when this was the topic of discussion. And for a little background, for those of you who may be new to this committee, the Oregon Seed Council is an association that represents both growers and dealers in the Oregon seed industry. It is the umbrella organization for the entire Oregon seed industry, consisting of, so my board consists of both growers and dealers. This was an issue that was debated, and the sponsors of the bill were there to talk about it with my board. We had a full discussion of the issues, and the board then voted unanimously to oppose this piece of legislation. With that, I'd like to express some of the concerns that were raised about the piece of legislation, and I think it was best expressed by my vice president, who will become president of the association in June of this year, who is also a member of the bargaining association. So she sits on both sides of this issue, and she's expressed this to her board of the bargaining association also. And her words were, we have a lot of issues to deal with in this industry, and this is an issue that should not be brought in front of the legislature at this time. The bargaining association has not done a good enough job reaching out to the dealers to work with the dealers voluntarily to get this information they're desiring now to have the State Department of Agriculture collect. Those are her words, not mine. She's on both organizations. She's in the leadership of both organizations. So with that, I think that was the sentiment of most of the people in the room that day, was that this is a process that should be done voluntarily. This is private business information, and it would not be complete information. I think that's the key to this whole discussion, is to ask dealers to give that information for one part of the crop of grass seed would be basically meaningless, is what the thought was. It just wouldn't give any value for the divisiveness it will create in the industry. So that is what I guess I would urge this committee to do, is table this bill. Let us in the industry work this out. We don't need the Department of Agriculture collecting this information. We have the ability to do it voluntarily. It's done now voluntarily by the growers. It's done actually voluntarily by the dealers. All they have to do is share those two pieces of information. The information is already there. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions about it, but I would respectfully ask that this committee not move this bill forward, and let us in this industry, and I represent both sides of it, let us solve it internally. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Roger.
Chair, Whip, members of the committee, Jenny Dressler with the Oregon Farm Bureau. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. Oregon Farm Bureau opposes House Bill 3435. Our farmer members have concerns with requiring seed dealers that do business with Oregon farmers to submit confidential business information to the Department of Agriculture. The industry is already collecting this information, as Roger said, regarding the acreage of grass seed varieties from growers, with an 85% participation rate. And this legislation would collect information only on contracted acreage, which is only a portion of the grass seed that is grown. It would not give a full picture. Farm Bureau sees this legislation as both unnecessary and intrusive, and asks for your opposition. Thank you.
Jenny, thank you very much. That was very timely testimony. Thank
Sorry,
you.
I speak quickly.
questions or comments for this panel?
Thank you both very, very much.
I appreciate your testimony. Anyone else from the public wishing to testify on House Bill 3435 at this point? Public hearing on 3435 is closed. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2984. Representative Parrish. We're particularly interested in the amendments to the bill. And if the bill is substantially changed, that it's better to talk about the amendment rather than the bill, you may do so, and please alert us to which amendment you're referencing.
Perfect. Chair Whip, members of the committee, for the record, Julie Parrish, House District 37, Westland and Tualatin. glad to be back in front of you to talk about the urban forestry bill. We'll take on the 2984 first, which is the main part of the pilot that would fund Clackamas County to create a turnkey operation, if you recall, for urban forestry, and then bring that back to the Oregon legislature and all other 35 counties with the turnkey product that they can go out and replicate, basically the creation of an organized urban lumber and tree planting for the state of Oregon, a different way to think about our future of forest products in our state. I'm bringing you the dash twos on 2984, and the dash twos do a couple things. One, based on recommendations from the Department of Forestry, because I'm not a forester, I'm a suburban housewife. This is not my field. So we have really certified smart people who work for the state of Oregon who looked at the original draft and said, hey, we have to do a few things to tweak to get in line with the federal forest practice standards and harvest taxes and things I'm not an expert in. And I said, please go do what it takes to get that all aligned so that we can do this. And they did. That is reflected in the dash two. And if you have really specific questions, you need to ask them because I'm not a forester. The other piece that it does is it addresses some DOJ language that they wanted to see into the bill. So we've taken their feedback and put that in there too about why we are doing this. So I believe that's sort of in the section two. That's new language. The other thing, and I had testified to, and it was not in the original 2984, was that the county had always anticipated that we were going to have an advisory process during the pilot. We want feedback and input. We want it from conservation folks. We want it from cities and counties and nurseries and wood, small wood forest plot owners and anybody else who wants to come. It is the language that we added, assign some folks, does not make them come, but says we will convene, and if you want to show up, show up. And so it's including but not limited to language about who gets to sit in on that advisory committee, because we are really doing something that is uniquely different. And we want input. We want to make sure we get this right. We want to make sure we create a model that works for our state, not for our state, something that can be rolled out to other states potentially in the future, because this really is about long-term visioning, and we need the best and brightest voices in this two-year pilot to be there. So that's essentially what the dash twos do. I want to discuss the amendments that you have from the city, and it sort of speaks to both 2984 and 2985, but I'll just tell it to you once in this one, and you can remember it for the next hearing. So the city brought to you a couple concerns, and I want to address them, and I actually want to talk about why I think the city's amendments kill the program before we even start the program. The city brought to you the concern about local control, and I appreciate that. I am a person who believes that there are levels of government for a reason and that certain jurisdictions can make things happen. So, for example, I did not vote yes on a bill that would have banned baby bottles and sippy cups and BPA because while I am a mother with children and we're not going to poison kids, Oregon probably wasn't the right place to do that, and I believed that the federal government was the right place. And after we ended that legislative session, 2 months later, the FDA made that a national standard for all states to compete. I voted yes on the preemption for at the state level on GMOs.
Representative, let me interrupt here. I apologize. Could you let us know which amendment
that the cities are bringing? I think it is the dash three. It's the dash three.
Because I understand there are now additional amendments, so I want everyone to be clear.
If there's additional besides the dash three, I don't know what they are.
Okay. And if I could get you, please, to go directly to the point you're making,
The point I'm making is the city thinks that the jurisdiction should belong to them. And my argument is that in the city of West Lynn, West Lynn has said that they are interested in being a partner in this. The city of Wilsonville has said they are not. This West Lynn-Wilsonville School District is in both cities. If the West Lynn-Wilsonville School District makes a decision to participate, basically by letting the city have the jurisdiction over other governments and other landowners in this scenario, this project can't work because the city of West Lynn and the school district, you could have trees over here, but the other half of the school district, you could not. If you had ODOT lands going through a city and ODOT says they want to participate, then that piece of ODOT land could not be in the county co-op. The other piece about cities is if you had land that it was outside a city that was participating because it was in a county, what the city's amendments does says if that land is future in the future annexed in, and unless the city has a grandfather clause that says you're not, you know, required to participate under city rules, anybody who thought they were in could be annexed into any city and then not have their tree suddenly be in the co-op. Future city councils could come and make a decision to change their mind. And so in my city, in West Lynn, 4 Democrats, 1 Republican said, we support this project, and they put forward a resolution. We've now had an election, and one of those city council, new councilors is like, we have to undo that. So the city having the jurisdiction, it doesn't actually let anybody have surety. And this is a long-term 40-year, 50-year project. So I take exception to that. The city also brought you a concern about, you know, selling things in a doing commerce in a residential area. This is a one-time sale. If you were a homeowner, cities let you have one-time sale for garage sales. They let you have it for selling a car. There's one-time, type opportunities in cities. This is a one-time sale. You have 10 trees on your personal property. That does not make you a forest, and it does not make you in the forest business. So I think that, you know, that's important. The dash twos that I'm supporting allow the city, League of Cities, to have somebody at the table for that advisory and purpose and get all of their stuff and air their grievances. I'm also just going to share one other thing about why I think the League of Oregon Cities is here. And colleagues, I'm just really frustrated by this. So one city government, who I will not name, I saw an email from them the other day describing this as Obamacare for trees. Now, I would not consider myself somebody who's in the Affordable Care Act supporter camp because of many of the provisions in it. So to hear that described and to hear such a total misrepresentation of what we're trying to do, and then the city's bringing amendments based on that type of feedback, tells me that the cities haven't done enough work engaging with this. So I'm really not interested at this point in amendments from cities based on really bad information from one community and bringing these forward. So I think that we need to proceed as forward with the dash twos. I welcome any questions.
Thank you very much. Committee members, we do not have a fiscal back on the amendments, so we can't finish our work on this bill today. I don't know if anyone has any questions of our colleague at this point, but we have nonetheless a situation where we had a bill that I think was reasonably popular among the committee members, and subsequently we have had some amendments come in that has put the bill in a position of having dueling amendments, if you will. I need each of you to make up your minds about this and report back to your respective caucus chairs for this committee, our two vice chairs. I need to know where we're at on this bill, and no surprises. And if anyone out there has another amendment on this bill or any other bill, and you're not letting the chair know at this point, your amendment may just go right in the circular file, okay? Now, I've been nice about this to this point, but if we reach the point in the session where this committee needs to conclude its business and the chair does not need, nor will he stand for surprises of amendments. So if you got stuff coming forward, you better let me know. With that, committee members, anything further on this bill? All right, I'm going to carry over the work session on House Bill 2984, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2985. And committee members, I'll preface it with the same comments. No fiscal, no conclusion at this point. Please know and report to our two vice chairs your position on the amendments. Representative Parrish.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record again, Julie Parrish, House District 37, West Lynn and Tualatin, bringing you the dash 3 on 2985, which is the amendment I am supporting. Similar to what I just explained in 2984, our friends at the Department of Forestry, who are certified smart on this topic, made some changes based on federal law and bringing it into these concepts into line with federal practice around forestry. The Department of Justice, who are certified smart in their area, also put forward language that they believe makes this strong and robust as well. So that's what you're seeing is the exact same language that needed to be put into the main co-op pilot in 2984 is also in this. This bill does not address the city's concerns with having a the preemption. We still believe and maintain that in the original underlying bill that if we want to use the word preemption, this program only works when the individual landowner has authority over or the individual government entity has authority over their own property to protect from political changes of city councils to look into the future that they have surety when they plant these trees that these are in the system. I do want to just share, and I did not send your emails because our emails are inundated right now with a whole other topic that has nothing to do with this committee. So I wasn't going to inundate you with emails, but we do have hard copies of a variety of business owners and people who support the Dash 2s, including a former Multnomah County chairperson on the County, County Commission has signed on to one of these letters. But these are businesses at every end of the spectrum, from architectural planning to landscape designed people to nurseries to mill workers to artists who are going to take these products and turn them into final finished products. These are, you know, people all across the Tri-County, urban, highly urbanized parts of our Tri-County area who are in support. I would be happy to let you look through and see the names. I'd be happy to read a bunch of names in the record, but I know we're busy in time, but this is not the city's the concern about the preemption just doesn't hold merit, and we are going to give them the opportunity to come forward in that pilot program and get those things into the final documents about MOUs between how do we work with our partners. And, you know, we don't want to plant insensitive, even right-of-ways that, you know, are riparian areas or whatever. Like, let's get that solved in the pilot and come back to the legislature with the finished product, and let's not kill this before we even start. And again, I'm very frustrated at where the origin of the amendments from the cities came from based on some of the email chains I've seen describing this project outside of this forum. So
thank you very much. Colleagues, again, if you'd report your preference on amendments to Vice Chairs McLean and Krieger, I would appreciate that. Any last-minute questions here? Seeing none. Thank you, Representative Parrish.
Here, I'll just add in your emails this morning, just some pictures of the tree across the street that rotted out, that we didn't manage well, that could have had a useful life. We sent those to you this morning just to, as this is why we want to do this. Trees do have a useful limit at the end of their lives. How do we make sure we account for that? And then I also think that, lastly, my last final comment on this is, if we're not properly using the taxpayer resource and maximizing it for as much value as we possibly can, well, it's malfeasance on everybody's part. So this creates a system where we can be smarter with the taxpayer resources and be better for our environment and for our job creators. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Parrish. I'm going to carry over the work session on House Bill 2985, and I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3459, and would Representative Helm, he's in the room, and Brett Brownscombe, please come forward. Welcome, gentlemen. To the extent that you can assist me in getting through my agenda by being brief, I would be most appreciative.
We can do that.
Thank you.
Good morning, members of the committee.
Good morning.
Mr. Chair. I'm Ken Helm, House Representative for District 34. I've been working day and night to try to sound more like Representative Wilson, but I'm not sure it's working.
You're getting there. You're getting there. I noticed it.
A couple more days, I'll be there. House Bill 3459 is a nice idea that is oriented around providing more opportunities for youth to access angling opportunities in urban areas, and overall to encourage youth to pick up fishing as a sport and as a pastime. As you know, participation in fishing has been declining. There are, with all of the other sports, organized sports and video games in kids' lives these days, it's ever more hard to encourage them to get out. And as many of you know, I'm an avid fisherman and an avid proponent of getting out and doing the sport. So there are three major parts of the bill. One is on the front page, would allow the department to hold up to 12 free fishing days per year. We've been talking about whether that is the appropriate number and whether that many free fishing days over the course of the year might disincent people to go ahead and get a license. So I'm not stuck on that number. I think the point is, how can we maximize the opportunities for kids to get out and fish? The second component is the fund. It is just an account. It's a creation of an account that could take funds from any sources. We're not asking for any money with this bill at this time, but the fund would be oriented toward funds that might come in from industry, individuals, and our state that are directed toward encouraging kids to get out and learn how to fish, particularly in urban areas. And the third is a task force, and I know we're up to our armpits in task forces this session. And again, the point there is, how do we get kids out fishing? And in discussions with the department and Mr. Brownscombe, I think there's an open question there about whether we need a separate task force just for this type of purpose, or whether we roll it up into a larger task force and just make it a component of a larger effort that the department is already conceiving. So that's the idea. Thank you very much. Happy to answer any questions as I'm able.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Brett.
Morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, Brett Brownscombe, Acting Interim Deputy Director with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I appreciate being up here with Representative Helm on his bill. I wanted to just express a few things on behalf of the department, and we have been working with Representative Helm. And the general objective of this bill related to increasing engagement in angling is something that we fully support. Efforts that take aim at recruiting new anglers and expanding participation in this part of Oregon's heritage is something that we embrace. It's something that we're also hearing from in other sectors of our constituency. Increased engagement in hunting is desired. We've had meetings with most recently the African American Hunting Association about, and then you go into Multnomah County, into downtown Portland, and there are shops that are kind of in the urban hip part of the area that are you see things that are antlers and hunting related efforts. And so we've heard from the public that in Multnomah County in particular, or in other counties where the populace of the state generally resides, if you want to increase in participation in, be it angling, hunting, or other activities, outdoor activities that are important to the public, go where the people live. And there is a real desire for us to do more related to incenting and engaging the public in urban areas in hunting and angling and other pursuits. And so we embrace that. Part of the issue here on this is related to the old teaching of give a man a fish, he eats for a day, give a man, or teach a man to fish, he eats for a lifetime. And part of the incenting of free days is about increasing opportunities. The deeper issue, we believe, is around not just providing a free day here and there, but how to shape values and desires in the public to not just go out on a day or two, but to really engage the subject matter here of this bill, angling, in a more daily part of their life. So a few other comments regarding task forces. There are many task forces coming out of this legislative session and related to the Department of Fish and Wildlife and its future, both in terms of funding and vision for how it engages with the public, both on
angling and hunting and other outdoor recreational activities not related to angling hunting. There's a task force bill, House Bill 2402, that thanks to Representative Witt's leadership, there's been a work group relating on funding, future funding for the department and the vision around the department that has been engaged in this conversation. And so the conversation that Representative Helm and the department have had relates to, does the task force that's referenced in this bill roll up into the larger task force, or is this a standalone issue? No disagreement over what the objective of this bill is trying to do. It's just how many venues are we going to have in task forces? Will the department be providing staff to engage on trying to solve some of these big picture issues around recruitment, retention, and increased public engagement? Related to doing the requirement to do a plan to increase angling for those under 17 years old in the bill, we did the department did a 2009 plan. It was finalized in 2009, specific to this issue, and that plan is the department's angling and enhancement plan. It has been implemented in part, not in full, due to limited funding. And so that plan took a 25-year view of how to increase angling engagement over that time and came up with outlined a lot of ways and strategies to do so. So the eye is on the ball. Part of what is needed relates to the broader picture of how do we fund new approaches to doing the outreach, doing the marketing, and getting this kind of engagement going. In our fee bill, Senate Bill 247, we are incenting youth engagement. And a lot of you've heard probably in the halls a lot of concern over increasing fees. We are really trying to reduce fees and keep the incentive there for youth level engagement in hunting and angling, and that's part of the fee bill that maybe hasn't been talked a lot about, but it's really aimed at that. We're also looking at and considering future rules that can be amended under existing statute to advance free fishing for youth that are engaged in department-related fishing events up to age 17. And so I think the attention this bill is providing on a needed issue about the department's future and connection to the angling heritage of Oregon is really important. And I'll leave it at that and take any questions about anything further for the department.
Thank you very much. Questions, Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Witt. And really, it's more of a comment than it is a question. Representative Helm, first of all, I appreciate you being here when you've succumbed to the malady that has hit a lot of us. So thank you for your diligence in being here to testify on a bill that's important to you, and I think it's important to a lot of us. Offering opportunities for young people to engage in this activity really is important, and I'm really grateful for you drawing attention to it. I'm reading Mr. Wolf's testimony, and I think I might agree that maybe 12 is a little excessive, and if that's something you're willing to have a conversation about, I'd be happy to participate in that. Mr. Brownscombe, you're absolutely right. Whatever the agency can do to incentivize youth getting out on our waters for whatever type of fishing they want to do, I think is really important. So I think this is a great concept. I'm not sure where the details all lie, but I want to commend the agency for having the conversation, and thank you for bringing it to us and elevating it. And if I can help in any way in the conversation, I'm happy to. I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you.
But I prefer they use a fly rod.
So would I.
How's that?
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we should, what's been brought up here, we should look at how many task forces and how many work groups we have going here and try to mold them into one or two, maybe maximum, because this is a situation of where you could do this as well as, and obviously we need to do a little bit better with our outreach, because we have a declining population when it comes to hunting and fishing and trapping and everything. So therefore, we need to zero in on that. But more importantly, we need to figure out where we want this department to go. We want to figure out how to fund it. We want to figure out how everyone in the state of Oregon funds wildlife, because it belongs to everyone in the state of Oregon, not just the people that hunt and fish, but everyone that is in this state. So I would suggest that we kind of work towards that.
Thank you, Representative Esquivel. Anyone else? How many license-free days do we have now in the state?
Two or
together. Chair Witt, members of the committee, so right now in statute we are limited to any two consecutive days, right, weekend days any two consecutive days each year. And that is what the department has done, and we've tried to do it in pairing with other agencies such as state parks, so that it's not just you can go fish, but you can go fish somewhere and not have to not only not have to pay to fish, but also not have to pay entry fees, for example, in state parks. So there's some opportunity, I think, for crossover engagement between agencies on trying to incent outdoor activities and recreation, including angling.
Okay. And my understanding of the way the bill is written, the task force is one issue, but the legislation, were we to pass it, it would authorize, absent consideration of the task force, this would authorize 12 free days. You wouldn't have to take advantage of the 12 days,
right,
but it would authorize you to consider up to 12 days, and that's not dependent upon the outcome of a task force, correct?
Correct. Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay, and I mean, I understand the good judgment of the department, and I am quite confident that it wouldn't be 12 days. But let me tell you the real-world problem I have with just that point, and it sounds like I'm being real picky here, but this is a reality. If I go fishing in a boat and this passes with 12 days, I'm probably okay because nobody's going to corral me. But if I go down a Rainier Beach and I'm fishing there all day on the bank, I'm going to get the masses that come in and go, you know, I paid for this license, I paid for the tag. Is it true you guys authorized 12 free days? Why would I want to buy a license? Why would I want to buy a tag? I know it as well as I know my own last name. And as well as I have confidence in the department's good decision here, the average fisher out there is going to, I'm going to get a bunch of pushback, and I'm not going to be able to get the fishing in done, the fishing done that I want to get in, and it's not going to be in peace. So, Representative McEwen.
Here, Whit, you're getting right at something I've been sitting here scratching my head about, and I don't know if this is part of what the work group could do or the task force could do, but how do we target this to young kids and not to the whole population? Is there a way to offer it for a limited population? I'm not sure. It may be something that the task force needs to deal with.
And I have to tell you, I understand this, and I agree with the concept. I'm fully supportive. Yeah. But it's that perception. It's a perception problem that I'm worried about here. So,
well, Mr. Chair and Representative McEwen, if I could respond to that. One of the things that we're learning about these free fishing days is that with a lot of our diverse populations, it's not just an individual that'll go fishing, it's the whole family.
Yep.
And we want to bring them into this great pastime. So what the department has done is combine free fishing days with a free day at the campgrounds or the state park, so that you can roll it all into one experience, and then they come out and help folks understand how to fish, tie the knots, tie the fly on, put the bait on, the whole thing. I think that's right on. But I also think one opportunity a year is probably too little. So I completely get your point, and I think this bill needs some work, and I'm happy to work on it. And I think we're headed for a lower number, and I understand that concern very clearly.
Great, because I'm telling you, you haven't lived until you've been on that beach when the temperature hits about 70 or 75. That is an experience that everyone needs to have. It's quite the entertaining place to be. So, with that, anything further, committee members, gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Appreciate it. Anyone else to testify today on House Bill 3459?
We got a couple walking there.
I have a couple here. All right.
We signed up for this bill last year.
Okay, very good.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be up here. Just out of courtesy to the committee.
Oh, thank you very much. No,
go ahead.
Appreciate your appearances. Thank you.
All right. Chair Witt, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. We're here to support this bill. I've already submitted testimony on O-List, which Representative McCune was kind enough to read from part of it and, you know, make me feel good. But just a couple things I want to point out is we think that the 12, see, in the bill it says up to 12 times each year, which, and they define times as a weekend, so actually it's 24 free days. So we think that's too many, because we it could mean if you allowed that many, some people would never buy a license. So and the comments that other people on this committee made about maybe the works task force look at how do you get a number of kids to get more involved in hunting and fishing, that's a good point too. The setting up the enhancement sub count, we have, if there's a way that you don't create a separate sub count and work it within something that's already in ODFW, we would support that. And the last point is we think there needs to be representation on this task force that's not spelled out in the bill of someone from the hunting and fishing community. So speaking as someone that's been hunting and fishing since I was 5 years old, caught my first fish when I was 5, killed my first bird when I was 10, and shot my first deer when I was 15. I think this is a great concept to encourage people to get more involved in a sport that I think is truly wonderful. So we support this bill with the exceptions that I made, and we urge that it go forward. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Good morning,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Rollater. I'm here today to testify on behalf of Oregon Outdoor Council and Desert Springs Trout Farm. If we want to support House Bill 3459, the other day we had a meeting amongst ourselves, the fish folk, and I said 24 days, and everybody said, "You crazy, Rollie?" It turns out I was right. It's amazing.
I didn't say.
Anyhow, the 24 days probably cost too much. I have the honor, and so does Tom, of serving on all three of the subcommittees that this committee has set up to talk about issues around ODFW. So it has to do with funding, because you bring young folks into the hunting and fishing community, then you have them for life. And so that's funding. It also has to do with habitat and how you pay for habitat. Yesterday at the habitat subgroup, we had some very interesting videos from Michigan about how they promote their outdoor program. And it's through Michigan Pure. And it was impressive what they've done to get people to think about coming out and doing outdoor activities. So this is right on to what we've all been talking about. I think as part of the Revenue Task Force, we've been talking about House Bill 2402, which is a task force to talk about a number of issues, including this. So we support this. I appreciate it. I think when I testified on the Trophy Trout Program, I talked about Trout in the City program in California that's very successful. I know I talked about getting people involved. I think that's another bill that fits into this concept of broadening the funding base, broadening the support base for ODFW and their activities. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Anything for our two panelists?
Thank
Gentlemen,
you,
thank you very, very much. Appreciate that. Anyone from the public left to testify on House Bill 3459? Not seeing anyone. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3459. And I'm going to note for the record that with late breaking news, we are going to have to carry over House Bill 2668. Is there anything for the good of the committee at this point? Mr. Gallagher, do you know what we're going to be doing the next time we meet at this point?
Probably shouldn't guess. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have a number of work sessions scheduled for Tuesday, one on House Bill 3382. Which extends the sunset for the prohibition on growing canola. House Bill 3435, House Bill 3459 increases the days for which Fish and Wildlife Commission can authorize a person to angle if that, in fact, moves forward from today's discussion. House Bill 2687 provides an exception to the offense of carrying a dog on the back of a truck, and I understand we have a new amendment on that that's we'll be bringing forward on that date. House Bill 2536 we'll be bringing up for a work session. House Bill 2537 increases damages for unlawful taking or killing of wildlife, and we heard that earlier in the session. House Bill 3089 is the bill that we looked at a couple of weeks ago, the four Dogami bills on geology and mining industries, and those have been incorporated into one single bill. We'll have a work session on that, and we'll also have a public hearing and possible work session on the retail pet store law.
Thank you very much. Notice to all that seats are going fast for that grand performance, and we'll see you all back here next time. We are adjourned. Adjourned.